cleaning up in private. It's the best thing because they can't sit and learn. At that stage of life, thank God everything is on the internet and I can listen and perfect. So it's great.
Great.
So now we're focused more on the job at hand because the Diane from London is coming for another visit on Sunday, and we're trying to give a little push. So I'm not thinking so much about next year. Baruch Hashem, thank God.
Okay, great. So let's get started, if you will.
Okay, let's get started. I
want to talk about a number of different applications of the same issue, the same question, and take a look at the tshuvas. And the question that I really want to ask you is, in the course of one's asiyas ha-mitzvos, if you designate a certain object in a certain place, and consistently that's where you use it, and that's where you fulfill the mitzvah, so it has a certain, if you will, spatial arrangement, a definite deliberate spatial arrangement, or there's a certain object that you use consistently, are you allowed to make a switch? Are you allowed to change the object and substitute one for another? You're allowed to take an object that was always located in a specific place and move it to another place? I mean, all this sounds very abstract, but let me give you a few hardcore examples. Let's say, for example, you have the minog, I'm not saying you do, but maybe you do, of wearing both Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin as in addition to Rashi's tefillin.
There was a rabbi that came last week who wore both at the same time. I'd never seen that before.
Right. So that is, amongst certain Sephardic communities, that is acceptable. My question to you is, can you take tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam and switch around the order of the parshios and designate it as tefillin shel Rashi? Like, for example, let's say somebody needs a pair of tefillin. You're not going to give him Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin because he has to wear Rashi's tefillin. I'll give you another case.
Once it's designated for one, is that it, or can you just switch it? Okay.
Okay, let's say, for example, the Aron Kodesh in a certain synagogue is located, we'll call it in place X, but now we're expanding the synagogue. Are we allowed to move the Aron Kodesh from one place to the other? And all this is going to be tied into our discussion here in Parshas Truma. I'll give you another example.
Well, I don't know, the question has to do with the holiness of the object, or because someone specifically designated it, or they said,
I don't know. I'm not sure, Avi. I mean, that's what we're going to have to discuss. What I want to just do now is give you an overview of a whole list of questions, a whole list of scenarios that were dealt with by the poskim, and I want to see if we can find one underlying principle that could apply in all cases. And there may be cases which are a little different, and therefore there are exceptions to the rule. Let me just give you I'm just shooting off questions, you know. Let's give an example of a mezuzah. A mezuzah was placed in one particular Pesach. Is there any halachic issue, any problem in moving it from that Pesach to a different Pesach? Now, sometimes you have a mezuzah which is placed on a Pesach. The room of that Pesach is only Durabanan. Let's say, for example, it's a storage room. It might be only a chiyuv derabbanan. Can I move that mezuzah from a Pesach derabbanan to a Pesach d'oraisa? Here's another question. Let's say, for example, I consistently light Shabbos candles with certain, how do you call it in English, pamutim?
Candlesticks.
Correct, candlesticks. And now I have candlesticks that I use for Hanukkah. Can I take the candlesticks that I use for Hanukkah and use them for Shabbos? Or vice versa? And let's say, for example,
would a washing cup be like that as well?
Maybe a washing cup? Maybe a washing
pasta. I want to make pasta, and my washing cup is there to fill up the pot. Can I use the...
Correct. Well, that might have to do with whether or not the netel, you know, for netilas yadayim is considered a chef to the mitzvah. Okay? Let's mention another case. Let's say, for example, I have a pair of tzitzis and I have two tzitzis up front, which is in front of my body. I have two tzitzis in the back. Can I switch them around? Can I take the ones in the front and put them in the back, the ones in the back and put them in the front? And that could lead us to a whole discussion about what's called an atara. An atara is that, you know, they sew down that crown to a talis gadol. And it seems, as we'll go along and see in the poskim, that the reason for this minug is because they want you to know which part of the talis goes over your head. And once that part of the talis is designated to go over your head, it could be that you can't switch the, you know, turn the talis inside out in such a way that that part now goes in the back or goes to the bottom. It's got to be the top, the part that goes on the top.
Right.
So what I want to do is try to see if we can go through the poskim. If you have page 5, then
five,
five you have. So if you have page 5, you will see that we have a discussion here in the Chasam Sofer. And of course, that was a tshuva that was written about 150 years ago.
And Sofer
was Ashkenaz? He was Ashkenaz, even though he was in Hungary, but there was a city in Hungary called Prešburg, and that city had mostly Ashkenazim, and most of Hungary later on became Hasidish, but he was the final word for Ashkenazic Jews in Hungary and even beyond Hungary. And on the bottom you have
pretty big posek.
Oh, big. He was a genius. On the bottom you have a tshuva from the Igros Moshe of Rav Moshe Feinstein. And there is a definite relationship between these two tshuvas. And before we get into them, I want to just point out that in the Beis HaKnesses, you have, let's say, we'll call them furniture, if I can use that word, and that furniture is designated for a certain purpose and is placed in a certain location within the Beis HaKnesses. A similar kind of idea we have, as we'll soon see in the poskim, with regard to sukkah. And that means that the krushim, those walls that make up the sukkah, because the sukkah needs at least two walls, the third one could be small, but the two walls, you designate each one of the krushim to be in a certain place. And year in and year out, that's where it is. So, you know, you write a little note, a little, you know, an indentation with a magic marker or whatever you use, that this goes, you know, on the top left, you know, and then another carriage.
Well, no, my father would do that, so that every year he writes southwest, northwest, northeast.
Excellent. And now the question is, if he wants to change it, can he change it? So you're beginning to get the flavor of what we want to discuss today.
Right.
How do we treat some object that's being used in the context of a mitzvah, and maybe it has to be designated for that purpose, and it's located in a certain place, can we switch it around? So for example, the Chasam Sofer, this tshuva, was asked about a Beit Knesset, an old shul, that part of it was now being torn down in order to expand the Beis Knesses, and that you're allowed to do. And this, he calls it Lerome Beis Elokeinu. And now they want to put the bima, that's the, you know, the like the shtender where they would read the Torah, they want to put it all the way on the left side, a lot closer to the Aron Kodesh. Normally, that bima, before they started renovating, was placed in the middle of the shul. And that's called bima ba'emtza. And we'll soon see that the Rambam in Hilchos Tefillah has a different word for bima. He calls it a teva.
That's what the Mishnah calls it, as far as I know.
Right, right. We invented the word bima much later on, but back in the day it was called the teva. And the Rambam is going to locate the teva in the middle of the shul. That's not necessarily the Ashkenazic minhag, but be that as it may, we're talking about a question that was asked about a shul that initially had its bima in the middle.
Okay.
And that really reflected an old minhag way back when, thousands of years ago. And now they claim that in the new Beit Knesset, meaning after the expansion and renovation, it would be more beautiful for the Beit Knesset if that bima would be, and also there'd be a lot more room for, I guess, for pews. He doesn't tell you, he just calls it Linoi Ularvacha Yoser. It'll be an improvement in terms of the beauty of the Beit Knesset, in terms of the functionality of the Beit Knesset, if the bima, instead of being in the middle, would be moved to a place that is Samach L'Aron Kodesh, meaning they would just simply take the Sefer out of the Aron Kodesh and put it right directly on the bima. And the question is, are they doing the right thing? And in the Tshuva, first the Chasam Sofer begins by quoting the Rambam. The Rambam, by the way, it's very interesting that the Rambam has codified all the laws of Beis Knesset, and especially the laws of how to build a Beis Knesset, how to structure it, and where the furniture goes, in the 11th chapter of Hilchas Tefillah. Very fascinating. And if you take a look in Shulchan Aruch, you'll see in Siman 150, that's Kuf Nun, the Tur, the Mechaber, the Ramah, they all write that the Teva from which we read the Sefer Torah should be in the middle, and anyone who wants to change it is Yado Ala Tachtona. We'll have to see what that phrase means, but basically means that the burden of proof is on him. And it's very important to have the bima in the middle so that everyone can be equidistant from the bima, and no one has a better shot at hearing the Sefer Torah than anybody else. That's called Kedei Sheyishmu Kulam B'Shav. But maybe the poskim say that we can justify, that's called Lamed Schus, on those places where they have the bima in a different part of the Beit Knesset, because they thought that Dafka, I'm reading here on the line 7, Dafka bismanam, back in the day, Shayarov ha'am v'lo shamu kol ha'kore kiyame ha'emtza. They had very large congregations, and the attendance at the shul was massive, and it was therefore critical that the bima be placed in the middle. However, today we have smaller kihilos. Our synagogues are much smaller. In fact, I can tell you this, that if you visit Eastern Europe, and you're lucky to see, you know, those smaller communities where the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, did not destroy the Beis HaKnesses, and the other non-Jews likewise, you can see shuls that are relatively very, very small. Even today, if you travel up to Tzfat, for example, you'll take a look at the Beit Knesset, the Arizal, and other Bate Knesios in Tzfat, and you'll see they're quite small. Some of them can only hold 20, 30 people.
I noticed that. I've been in Tzfat, yeah.
You've been there. So then it means that the pressing need to have the Bima and the Emtza, which applied back in the day, is no longer, shall I say, no longer as urgent today as it was then. Again, we're not talking about Riverdale now. You know, we're talking about the Chasam Sofer in Presburg. And he said the shuls were very...
Well, all the shuls in Riverdale, since I've been there, well, not all, the two main shuls have expanded tremendously.
Tremendously, yeah. And if you don't believe me, you'll watch the backer beats, right? You'll see it. Now the Chasam Sofer says that, let's go back to the source, the original source in Shas, of this minog to have the bima b'emtza. And he says it's a Gemara in Sukkah Daf Nun Aleph Amid Beis, and there the Gemara is talking about Anshe Alexandria. Right, Alexandria back in Egypt was a massive synagogue. In fact, the Gemara tells us that when they read the Torah, and the Ola would recite the brachos, the people could not hear him. It was such a massive kila that they used to have flags that would tell them, you know, like as a sign, an alert sign, now's the time to say Amen. You know what I mean? That's the time. And there, that's really the source for the concept of Bima Ba'emtza. But the Sam Sofer writes, Nishtavshu Akilos Bekam Mekomos V'Adra Kal V'Chomer Hashtu Ma Alexandria Shebechol Sos Lo Shamu Kol Akol. He's saying that in Alexandria, the people were so far away because of the massive populace that they couldn't even hear the reading of the Torah and the recitation of the brachos. Sheitzrichu lahanif misudarim, they had to wave flags. V'afilu hachi, and nevertheless, hamidu ba'emtza, they put the beam in the middle, v'lo basof. Afal gav shekocha yichon liros hanafas sudar me'asof, k'mo me'emtza. He says that it would have been, in a certain sense, more logical to place the bima towards the end, because if that be the case, he says that instead of putting the bima in the middle, he says because in such a way they would be able to, he says it, set up different flags all over the shul. But nevertheless, That sugya for Anshe Alexandria insists that the bima has to be ba'emtza. Umisvara Omar, he says, I would say logically, kevan shanu machzikim habima sheba korin parshas akorbanos kimo amizbeach. He wants to suggest the following: that the reason why the Gemara insists, despite reasons that logistically would have been contra, that the bima be ba'emtza is for a whole different reason. It has nothing to do with expanding and enhancing the ability of the tzibur to hear the kriya, but rather it has to do with the fact that this bima is a replacement for the mizbeach. And in fact, in Chag HaSukkos every day, we circulate the bima, just as at the time of the Beis HaMikdash they would circle around the mizbeach. So it means that the bima with the Sefer Torah now becomes the replacement for the mizbeach. Now the mizbeach in the Heichal was situated in the middle of the Heichal. And therefore, since it was Omei Ba'emtza, and it was equally distant from the menorah and the Shulchan, okay, we're talking about the Heichal now, and the location of the Mizbeach, and this is based on Rashi here in Parshas Truma. I don't have the Chumash with me now, but maybe we'll get a hold of a Chumash. We'll look up the Rashi. And Rashi himself is reflecting a Sugin Yuma. And the Bima now is like a Mizbeach. This is called a Mizbeach HaPnimi. Therefore, Roy Lahamido Bamsa Beis HaKnesses Ledamoso Lebeis HaMikdash. Our synagogue is a replacement for the Beis HaMikdash. And there are many dinim that reflect that. And one of those dinim, he says, is the Bima Ba'emtza. So the fact that you, the Shoel, in this tshuva want to insist that Bima Ba'emtza is more of an issue back then than it is today, he says, absolutely not. The structure of the Beis HaKnesses has to be similar to that of the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, we need a Bima Ba'emtza. He says that in those communities that the minhag is to build a new Beit HaKnesset, when there was no Beit HaKnesset there before, then for sure you can definitely assume that they would put the bima in the middle. And how much more so in the case where they're expanding and renovating, where the bima already had its place, and it's been there for who knows how many years, it would be absolutely unacceptable, he says, to change the location of the bima. So now he's adding a whole new element here. If it's a brand new shul, then the bima has to be bamtzah in order to replace the mizbeach, which was located equidistant in the heichal from the menorah and the shulchan. But if you have an old Beit HaKnesset, then you have an additional factor that presses to object to relocating the bima. And it means that you can't change the location of the bima from the old Beit HaKnesset. Why not? Oh, says the Chasam Sofer, and this is the punchline of the whole tshuva for our purposes, because this is going to have, you know, implications and repercussions throughout all the questions that we asked. Dare Isa v'psikta, and now the psikta quotes a pasuk in Parshas Truma. And once again, this is in Perek Chavav of Shmos. And the pasuk says, this is pasuk Lamed, Vakemosa es ha-mishkan kimishpato, or that's pasuk Lamed, Asher her-esa bahar. Now, Hashem had already revealed a vision to Moshe Rabbeinu up on the mountain of what the Mishkan would look like. And then, in the following pasuk, it says, just one second, I'm getting... No, not the following pasuk. In the... But here it is. In pasuk Chaf, in the same chapter, Perek Chafav, it says, Uletzela ha-mishkan ha-shenis lefas tzofon esrim koresh. That there were 20 kroshim of the mishkan that had to be placed with lepa'as tzofon, on the northern side. So the psikta says the following. In the pasuk, in pasuk Laman, it says, kimishpato. Says the psik of Chiyesh Mishpat Lekroshim. What does that mean? There's a Mishpat. Mishpat always means like you have a person who's standing in front of a court and he has a litigation against someone else. That's called Mishpat. But what does that have to do with the Kroshim? Now, when we talk about Mishpat, we mean to say that you have certain rights. And if I violate those rights, you can now sue me in a court of law, and the judges now have an obligation to protect your rights. That's called mishpat. Mishpat means that if somebody's rights were violated,
then the court can bring back the person.
Right. Yeah. So for example, if the rainwater is flying out of my roof and it's damaging your mirpeset, so I violated your rights to that mirpeset, then it's kimishpat. But here, what rights do the kroshim have? And it's unbelievable. The psikta says, keresh shezocha. Zocha means it possessed, you know. Shezocha linase b'tzafon, lo yishtane, lo seiso l'darom. The tzafon is superior to the darom. And once that keresh, that beam, has been designated for the tzafon, then the Torah calls that mishpat, that it now has rights, and so to speak, as if it were an animate object to demand, I belong to the tzafon. And you might ask me, well, maybe that's a nice psikta, but who says that we have a right to apply the logic of the psikta lahalacha in other areas and extrapolate from this psikta? So he tells you that the Maril, who's one of the great poskim, Maril Paskins, based on this psikta, and again, I think we have the Maril, I'm just trying to remember what page it's on. One second. Okay, Blee Netter will find this Maril, because that's pretty important, this Maril. Here it is on page 3. On page 3, the Maril Paskins that the Marash Hayim Esamin Hadfanim Lebechitzas Asuka Aleph Beis Gimel Kidei Liros Seder Amidasam Shelo Lishanos Mishana Lishana.
We used to do that just so that it would be more efficient the next year. You know that this is because it's not allowed.
Okay, so you know, what shall I say? You lucked out because you did it the right way, maybe not for the right reasons.
But it's clear here that he's saying this for halachic reasons.
Correct. He's saying shalom l'shanosam mishana l'shana.
Right.
And, you know, you may have many, many different reasons why you want to change the position of the krashim of the sukkah, the mechitzas, and so forth, but you're not supposed to be doing that, says the Ma'aril. Now, the Ma'aril was back in, I think, the, like 400 years ago, and now the Chasam Sofer 150 years ago is quoting the Psak of the Ma'aril with regard to the mechitzas of a sukkah and applying it to the bima of a Beis HaKnesses. And if you want to use the language of the psikta, as far as the bima is concerned, it was zoche to be ba'emtzan. You can't undermine that zchus. Now, there's a famous sugya in Masechet Shavuos about expanding Yerushalayim. And that's called Mosifin ala ir v'al hazaros. That's in Shavuos Daf Tesvav. And he says that although you're allowed to expand Yerushalayim and the Azoros, nevertheless, lo yishtane hanitan b'tzofa litno b'dorm nito memtza lasiya mimkoma. It means that any time that they expanded, you know, the Azoros and the Beis HaMikdash, they would always make sure to guarantee that that which was placed in the tzofon would get the tzofon, and in the dorm would get the dorm. Sharei bayis shedi ha'yagol mi bayis rishon. That's a famous sugya in Ashutvim. That the second bais was much larger than the first bais. Nevertheless, the basic kalim, there are three basic kalim that make up a mikdash, that's called Mizbeach, Menorah, and Shulchan. Actually, there's a fourth kli. There's Menorah. One second, Menorah, Shulchan. We're missing something here. Just one second, give me a second. Oh, and the Aron is missing here. Is Lonishtanu Min HaEmtza. They, in the second bias, even though the structure and the size was so much different than the first bias, nevertheless, the Kalim were placed in the middle. Afal Pishal Fierach Abinyan Shalachshav Yeh HaEmtza Lahola BeEmtza Shoy Beis HaKnesses. The answer is because there's a halacha of BeEmtza. And again, the emtza might change depending upon the dimensions of the expanded Beis HaKnesses, or in this case, the expanded Azara. But nevertheless, there's such a thing as emtza, and there's such a thing as tzafon and durum. And that's what we're saying about the krashim, and that's what we're going to say about the teva as well. So to summarize what we've been learning until now, this question about moving objects from one place to the other is something that's addressed by the poskim in a very serious way, and the source for all this is our parsha, is Shmos Perek Chavav, and the psikta that derives that lo yishtane hanitan batzofa litno bidorom, because of the zchus that some object has, a claim, you know, I own the tzofon. I have rights to the tzofon, and that those rights cannot be undermined, so to speak. Now, I don't know if the Chasam Sofer would have said this had it not been for his assumption that the place, the location of the bima, is very crucial. And even with a new base Knesset, you have to make sure that it's ba'emtza to replace the Mizbeach, which is ba'emtza. You know, if you didn't have that, maybe what I'm asking is, what would the Chasam Sofer say if I placed a Cheftza Shel Mitzvah consistently I placed it in a certain location, but for no logical reason. You know, it was just very convenient for me.
Right. It's very into the idea of the bima being in the middle, because that has a big significance.
Correct. And the tzofon,
the Beit HaMikdash, and that was in the middle, and we circled the Mizbeach, we circled the Bima. All these things are very important. It doesn't seem like if it was more of a random thing, but now with the Sukkah, that because you put this in the northwest corner, that it has to be the next.
Well, no, that's because, Avi, in the original, what's the original here are the Krashei HaMishkan. And the Torah tells us that the Krashei HaMishkan, some were in the Tzofon, some were in the Dorom, and you can't switch those Krashim from one to the other. It means that Tzofon and Dorom are not just haphazard. It's not just that, you know, this is the north and this is the south, and there's no difference between the two. There's a certain significance to the Tzofon, there's a certain significance to the Dorom. Now, in the second Shuv on the page, which is from Igros Moshe, he's also discussing a case where they want to expand the shul and move something around. But here he's talking about the Aron Kodesh. And he writes that B'Dovashe Rotzim Livnos Aron Kodesh B'Toch HaKotel B'Ofen SheKotel HaMizrach Yiyeh Shaveh V'Nimtzeh SheMokom Aron Kodesh SheYeh Omed Sham Ad Ata Shaya Omid Shamarata Yishar Chelek Mi Beis HaKnesses. So what happens is that in the reconstruction of the shul, the place where the Aron used to stand now becomes an integral part of the Beis HaKnesses. He says, Af Mokom HaAron Hu Rak B'Kedushas Beis HaKnesses Umemela ein ba makom shum horada mikdusha bazeh sheyasiru mena misham ha'aron. He says that if you were to take the makom ha'aron and reconstruct the Beis HaKnesses in such a way that makom ha'aron would be outside of the walls of the synagogue, that would be prohibited. But as long as the makom ha'aron is within the Beis HaKnesses, then it has kedushas Beis HaKnesses. Meaning, there's no special kedusha to the makom where the Aron stood. That makom has the same identical uniform kedusha as the balance of the Beis HaKnesses. So as long as you're guaranteeing that the makom or Aron will stay within the parameters and the borders of the Beis HaKnesses, and therefore the makom still has kedusha as Beis HaKnesses, then he says that's okay.
But an Aron is not a bima, right? An Aron is not a bima.
Right. So let's just see how he develops this. He says, the afshe makom beis haknesses yesh bo kedusha, the beis hakmikafurish b'megil daf chavav. Okay, and that's how we pask it in Simon Kufnun Aleph. The af bebotek nesiel shemachasim beritzva shal krashim nami asur. He's saying the following, and he's sort of like inflicting a wound on himself here. He's asking a kash on himself. He's saying, I just told you that all I need is to guarantee that the Makom Aron is within the parameters of the Beis HaKnesses, but that's problematic, because What generates the Kedushas Makom Beis HaKnesses? It's the Beis HaKnesses itself. What generates the Kedushas Makom HaAron? It's the Aron itself. Now, to the same extent that the Kedusha of the Makom Beis HaKnesses is equal to, but doesn't exceed beyond the Kedusha of Beis HaKnesses, so too the Kedushas Makom HaAron should be identical with the Kedusha of the Aron itself. In which case, if the Makom HaAron has the identical Kedusha as the Aron, then how can we take the Makom HaAron and integrate it into the Beis HaKnesses? The Kedusha HaAron is that much greater than the Kedusha Beis HaKnesses. That's the kasha that Rav Moshe is asking.
So he said it was okay, now he's saying maybe not?
Right, you know, if you're familiar with the style of Rav Moshe and many other poskim, but especially Rav Moshe, he offers very often a psak right off the bat, and then he starts asking kashas until he can finally justify his final psak, and that's what he's doing in this case. He says, "Mikol kol hamafurish bekursaya shehu kisei sheinichalav asefet Torah." Okay, so the Sefer Torah was placed, you know, when it was, let's say, for example, you had a double reading, right? A Shabbos with two parashiyos, or whatever the case may be, or like Rosh Chodesh today. So you have to keep the Sefer Torah, once it's out of the Aron, in a specified place until it's ready to put it on the Bima. And that place is called the Kursaya in the Lashon HaGemara, and it's a specially designated chair where they would place the Sefer Torah. And the Rambam in Hilchas Sefer Torah, Perek Yud, says that Rak Mishum Shalfam Nosin Olav Sefer Torah B'lo Mit Pachas U'Tash Mishnik Dusha U'Belav Hachi Hoyolo Rak Kedusha D'Beis HaKnesses. And he says the following, that this strict halach of Kedusha applies to something that's exclusively designated for the Sefer Torah. But not only that, the Rambam seems to assume that that object has direct contact with the Sefer Torah. In other words, in order for the Sefer Torah to engender Kedusha onto some sort of a kisei, you need two conditions to be fulfilled. Number one, that it is exclusively dedicated for the Sefer Torah, and that could probably apply to this Kursaya. But there's another condition, and that is that the Sefer Torah is placed down on the Bima directly without any mitpachas that separates from the Sefer Torah from the Bima. But in the case of this Kursaya, there they put the Sefer Torah on the Kursaya in its mitpachas, what we call a mantle. You know, it's always covered.
Right. So then it doesn't give the Aron that higher level of Kedusha?
Not the Aron. Oh, yeah, he's about to talk about the Aron. You're already a step ahead of me. But right now he's focused on Kursaya, and he says, why is it that Kursaya, even though it was designated for the Sefer Torah, doesn't have the same Kedusha as the Sefer Torah? The answer is because you only use it with a hefsek of a mitpachas. And therefore he says, v'af bi Aron gufe. Now, as you said, we could talk about the Aron. The Gemara Megillah tells us that when they were malbish the Sefer Torah b'mitpachas u'b'me'il, the Aron takes on the status of tashmishim d'tashmishim. What does it mean? It means the Aron is not holding on to the Sefer Torah, but it's holding on to the mitpachas that covers the Sefer Torah. And because whenever the Sefer Torah is in the Aron, it's not there naked, so to speak. It's not opened and the mantle is not removed. So there's no direct contact between the Sefer Torah per se, the gvilin of the Sefer Torah, the cloth of the Sefer Torah, and the Aron Kodesh. And therefore the Kedusha of the Sefer of the Aron is defined as tashmish to tashmish. And therefore, just like we said by kisei, which is that was the kursai that we discussed before, that it doesn't have the same kedusha as the Sefer Torah, so to the Aron, insofar as we only use the Aron to house the Sefer Torah when the Sefer Torah is covered by a mantle, also has a low level of kedusha identical to that of a kursai. And here Rav Moshe quotes the Gaon in his Biurei Agra in Yoredeya, where he says that the Aron ve'amigdal, migdal means that in the old days, and you'll see it amongst Sfaradim today, they used to place the Sefer Torah in a migdal. How do you say that in English? A migdal.
A tower.
A tower, okay, but usually the word tower means something that goes up high. Here it was just the tower that encircled and encased the Sefer Torah. Shemim, afal pishe manichabo Sefer Torah, kshu levado, el kshu betik, shebetocho. The olam utashmish dikdusha. Okay, so this, I think we can fast forward to the next paragraph. And he writes, al kol ponim eich shenema betam kedusha samokim shal beis haknesses, Ein zeh b'makom aron shemakom aron ein bo kedushas aron. He says that the place which is designated for the Aron Kodesh does not have the kedusha of the aron, but rather has the same kedusha of the Beis HaKnesses, and therefore lekem b'zeh mishum shinui kedusha. If now we want to take the place that was the floor that was under the ground that was underneath the aron and use it as ground underneath the Beis HaKnesses, that's not in any way changing the makom and insulting it. This makom was always part and parcel of Kedushas Beis HaKnesses, and it remains part of the Kedushas Beis HaKnesses, and that is because, as we saw before, the Aron is only Tashmish the Tashmish al Kedusha. The Imkain Af Belo Mechira the Maimed Ansheir HaYerushalayim Lashanos. Normally, if you want to change something in the Beis HaKnesses, you have to get the permission of the Tuvei HaIr. But here, if we're maintaining the same identical Kedusha, we don't even need the permission of the Maimed Anshei HaIr. So again, if you press the return button, up until now, the Tshuva Rav Moshe sees no problem in taking the Makom HaAron and using it as part of the Beis HaKnesses proper. But now he looks in a different, slightly different direction. He says, "Ach, Yesh Makom Lesar." One could claim against me. That's, I told you, is the style of Rav Moshe. He says something and then he asks a kasha on it. The Ach Belo Shinui Kedusha. Forget about the fact that you might have an issue in changing or lowering the Kedusha, because Kedushas Aron is greater than that of Kedushas Beis HaKnesses, and we've solved that problem, but there might be a second problem, and that is that a place has rights to it. Keresh Shezocha Linasim B'Tzofon Li'olam B'Tzofon. And the Magen Avraham quotes this in Simon Ches, we'll see, with regard to tzitzis, Sifkat and Vav, Sha'af Sha'kdusha Dechol Aruchos Hoyse Shava, Mikomakom Hoya Aso Lashanos, even though Tzofan and Durham in the Beis HaKnesset, in the Beis HaMikdash, had the identical Kedusha, but nevertheless you can't change it. In Kain Hachinami Ulai, he says, maybe you'll argue that also amokum shezocha shielav aron yesh lios olav liolam, right? Those very stones that make up the floor that were designated to hold on to the aron, those stones have the right to claim we want to hold on to the aron. You designated us for as the mitzvah object for the aron. Again, this is despite the fact that it's only a tashmish to tashmish, but nevertheless it was designated for the aron. I'm not going to give up. You know, again, the ground speaks, the inanimate objects speak, and says, I'm not going to waive my rights to be the host for the Aron. Oh. And now Rabbi is going to say something that will have an impact on all the discussions that we want to have. He says the following, Mikol Makom, he says, nevertheless, Kavon, Sheyesh Tzorech Bazeh Kedei Lahagdil Beis HaKnesses. You want to expand the Beis HaKnesses, and in doing so you're going to change the Makom of the Aron, and it's going to become enveloped in the Makom Beis HaKnesses. Oh, afil l'noi bi'alma, even if it's not a Tzorech in terms of adding more seats and pews, but it's necessary for aesthetic reasons. Mistaber Sheyesh Lahati, I have a logical reason why I think that this could be permissible. Why? To ask la makpida vitalis sheyeh tomid sad sheyeh lemala lemala. There are those who will see in Simon Ches in Hilchas Tzitzis, which is I think on the next page, that you have one half of the talis that goes on the top of your head, and it always remains on at that position. It, you know, it's lamala, right? Lamala means ala rush. So why not apply the same thing here? Modim even those who are makpid, they agree shem nikra lamala. If there's a cut, actually a slit, I don't think he means literally or exclusively a split, but it means if, let's say, there's some damage I'm not sure how to say pakad in English. It's some damage that occurred to the top part of your talus.
Yeah.
And now you want to turn it such that top part will be on the bottom, is mutter. That you're allowed to do. And this he bases on the Siddur of the Yavetz, who anthologizes different Piskei Dinim, some of which are his own. He says that if there's a reason why you want to switch around the talus, then you're allowed to do that. Meaning, basically what he's saying is that this halacha, that we're not allowed to be mishana, and we saw it with regard to the krushim, that halacha is not an absolute, shall we say, avera v'isur.
But only if you don't have a reason.
Exactly. If you're doing it litzorech, and essentially you're embellishing your mitzvah as a result of changing the position, let's say that which was lamala now becomes lamata, and you embellish your mitzvah either because the top part is cut or because he wants to beautify the mitzvah in that way, he says in such cases there's no reason to prohibit it. And here that you want to expand the Beis HaKnesses, and it'll be a great enhancement if he moves the Makom Ha'aron, then you're allowed to do so. But so far what we saw here, Bain, whether it's the Chasam Sofer or the Igros Moshe, they both seem to be quoting the same halacha of Keresh. Shenasta Lios Bitsofa Lishtana Lidor. It means that the poskim are taking this pretty seriously. Now you've heard of the Shnei Luchos Habris, the Shalah. And he lived about two centuries ago and more. And in his Shalah, which you'll find on the bottom of your page 3, he writes with regard to Talis, Rohui. You have it?
Yeah, it has vowels.
Yeah. Roy Shaosan Tzitzios Shebo Rishona Bitsada Rush. Sheyu li olam litzad harosh. Kevon shezachu lios lamala ein roi sheyerdu b'malasan. Now this is very, this is very revealing, so to speak. You have two, let's say two tzitzis which are in front, and two tzitzis in the back. Or in the case of a talis gadol, because of the way you put the talus on, there are always going to be two tzitzis that are higher than the other two tzitzis in the back that are lower. And he says that we should be very, very careful not to switch it around, so that the tzitzis which are lamala should not be placed lamata. However, what I want to show you is that that the Mishnah Berurah, we'll soon see, is not so keen, and that you'll find on page 4, he's not willing to accept this shalah as binding. Do you see the top of page 4? He says that after mentioning the shalah, he says, Ubekisvei Ari Zal Kosa Shaloi Ari Makpid Al Zeh. In other words, that there's no kpeda on this. Now, let's go back to the Shalah and get a feeling as to why he himself was makpid. And if you look in the Shalah, he writes, that I'll prove to you how careful we have to be about this. Nogim lasos ateres tiferes. We put an atorah on the talis leheker as a sign that we shouldn't forget where is the head, and that those tzitzios that are near the head should always remain near the head. I mean, I never knew in a million years that that's the reason for putting an atara. I thought the atara is meant to enhance the beauty of the talus. Shelo yachlifenu v'lo yomer oso elyonim lamata v'tachtonim lamala. Right, you have those tzitzis that go all the way near the head on a higher level, and then the lower level tzitzis. And he based
every talus has an atara. Some are shinier than others.
Correct. Correct. And he's telling you, well, let's get down to the source of it, to the root of it. What's this whole business about? And he writes that this is all based on Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi, which is quoted by the Ran in Perek HaBoneh, the Chachmei Mishnah state that Kosvin Karshe HaMishkon Leida Ezer Ben Zugo Omar of Ami Vakimosa es Hamishkan Kimishpato Vaki Yesh Mishpat Lietim Elikersh Zachli Nasim Bitsafon Yinasim Bitsafon Liola Vaki Bidarm Yinasim Bidarm Liola Lefichach Roshman Alem Shal Yachlifu. So basically, what we saw in the Maril on the same page, namely that the Sukkah, it's very careful to be Roshem on each Keresh, each Mechitza, this is where it belongs, the Tzafon and the Darom. The same logic we should apply to its to tzitzis, to a talis. And that which is designated to be near the rush, that's like the tzafon, should always remain near the rush. Now,
down below, there is no tzitzis. It's just by the back, isn't
it? Well, again, there are two issues here. Number one is if you want to switch the front to the back, because the tzitzios in the front have a right to say, well, we want to be in front. And secondly, the tzitzios that are closer to the rush, to the atara, have a right to say, we don't want to be at the, on the bottom there, far away from the rush. But the as we saw before, and I want to see it again, on page 4, is the Shulchan Aruch writes that there should be two tzitzios lefanov, ushtayim li'achrov, and a lot of people are not makbid on this. And that's what I find odd, which I never do. People during Kriyat Shema will take the tzitzis from the back and bring it up to the front. Did you ever see that? Well, you're not supposed to do that. He says that the tzitzios in the front should remain in the front, and those in the back, in the back. It would be very odd, for the sake of kissing your tzitzis and indicating the chimuv ha-mitzvah, that you would to undermine this halacha of shtayim lefanov and shtayim li'achrov.
When you kiss your teeth, you think the kiss only the front two, right?
Oh, that's something else. If you're only kissing the front two, so leave the other two in the back. That's wonderful.
No, but that's what they want. I think what they want to do is kiss all four.
Okay, so isn't it paradoxical that in order to demonstrate your love for the tzitzis and kiss them, you're removing them from their place? In other words, when you wear tzitzis, you don't wear four tzitzis. Imagine if you had a poncho,
right?
And you wrapped a poncho in a way that the entire poncho was up front,
right?
Yeah, that's not going to warm you up. You know, the tzitzis have to be surrounding you. But the Mishnah Berurah says, "Nagu lasos haTorah michatichas meshi l'simon shalosan tzitzis shalafanav yu liolam lafanav." Okay, it's a little bit different than. Perhaps a little bit different than the talis katan, but it really comes down to the same idea, that by putting the atara there, you know exactly which tzitzis are in front and which are in the back. And lo and behold, the Mishnah Berurah quotes our parsha, Parsha's Truma, as we saw quoted in the Psikta and the Yerushalmi Koresh, Shezachah Betzafon, Heyei Liolam Betzafon. So it does sound, until he quotes the Arizal, that we can justify the Atara, just as the Shalom had done so, by telling you that the tzitzio should not be removed from their place. And therefore, if we go back again to the Shalom, The Shalom therefore is very careful. She Osan Tzitzis Shavuot Rishon of Itzad Rosh Yuli Olam Itzad Rosh, because that Itzad Rosh is a Mila, like the in the case of a Talis Katan, those Tzitzios that go in front of you, that's a Mila for those Tzitzios. Now all of a sudden you're going to put them in the back seat. You know, that's a kind of a downgrade to the Tzitzis. So just to summarize everything that we did today, it seems that there is a source for this concept of not moving things around. And again, we didn't get a chance to see how this applies to mezuzah and to other cases, but we certainly saw it in the case of the bima, of the makom ha'aron. We saw it in the shalom in the case of the tzitzios. And although Rav Moshe Feinstein was willing to say that if it's litzarech, okay, you can move it around, and although the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Arizal that we don't have to be so machpid about this, I'm not sure if therefore this whole discussion falls into oblivion, if you follow what I mean. Because I still think that the poskim are going to be very careful about not moving things around and changing their places, changing their locations.
Okay, very good.
Indeed, one of the contemporary poskim, Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein, is very, very careful about the pamutim, the candlesticks that we discussed before. And this you'll see on page 6 in the Chashukei Chemed, Kosiot shebepamutei Shabbos, ha'im yakpidu shelo lachlifam bekosios ha'chanukia. You should not be replacing those pamutim that are used constantly for Shabbos, that are designated solely for Shabbos, and replace them with pamutim or candlesticks that are used for lighting Chanukah candles. So you don't want to take those Chanukah candles and use them, I don't mean the candles, but the candlesticks, and use them for candlesticks for Shabbos. So you see that he takes this halacha very seriously. And in general, the Tashbetz speaks about the fact that something that's huchzak b'davar shebekedusha, it's not such a simple matter to be maver it, and it no longer is used for davar shebekedusha. And we mentioned before, mezuzahs could be a problem, that if you move a mezuzah from one place to the other, and I'll read to you the Be'er Moshe, he writes, Ki chayovim lomar shemedubar b'mezuzah shenitna b'pesach shechiyuva b'mezuzah midoraisa shein la'avir l'pesach achir shechiyuva d'roi nach kol shein menia ach ein kol menia la'avim mipesach cheder echad l'cheder acher. That although, again, as I pointed out, there is some poskim who would be lenient and say that if you have a reason to move the mezuzah from one room to another, you're allowed to do so, as long as you're not taking it down from a chiyuv d'oraisa down to the level of a chiyuv d'rabbanan. Nevertheless, there are other poskim, which you'll see here on your page 7, that paskin that even with regard to mezuzah that it was on one wall, on one room, one doorpost, that itself gives it the chshivas of that doorpost, and you should not. Let's say, for example, if why does get chashivas in that room? Let's say that's your study where you learn Torah. Is then you shouldn't take the mezuzah and place it on the Pesach of a different cheder. That's not a room designated for Torah study. So we see that even in the poskim, there is a certain sensitivity and a careful, meticulous attitude towards moving, you know, a chefter shel mitzvah that is designated in one place, and relocating it elsewhere.